That's wonderful. A revision of life. How many of you have had those? I bet everybody's hands go up. Oh my gosh. I had a major revision when I was working as a head of the case management nationally for a major corporation and traveled to do catastrophic illnesses and injuries and train nurses to handle those and interview nurses to join us and work with companies as to what we could do to benefit their people. And I got to where there was an ethical issue, because it was in the insurance industry, and things shifted. Instead of being in a position where I could make things happen that wouldn't have happened without me being there by getting a policy exception so somebody gets the equipment they need, it became, how do we not do anything for anybody because it costs us money? So I was in this ethical dilemma and realized I'm going to have to resign. And I ended up getting laid off in a major corporate restructure, which is what gave me the resources to go to Unity Village to study for a month, which was a major revision of my life. It was the year I turned 50. I had my 50th birthday there, and I had an experience on Easter Sunday at Maurice Williams Black Evangelical Unity Church, where I got a blessing and I knew that I needed to take this new path. But it was also scary because I was single at that point. My only source of income was what I would do. And I lost this big corporate job, and I take the money that they give me for the layoff, and I plan to go to Unity Village. And I loved it. I loved it. Came back to Texas to help hospice my dad. And he died about a month before I was scheduled to go back to spend another month there. And one of the things that I thought about, and Gary Jones, who was one of the deans at the time that became a dear friend of mine, said, if you're thinking about being a minister, when all of you all come to Unity Village, you get all excited about how cool it is, and everybody wants to apply to ministerial school. I was kind of the opposite. I was like, I don't think I can do that. I'd be a licensed teacher. That would be a real honor. And what came about was this shift where when I got home, I got a call from a corporate headhunter that said, Pam, I have got a job. They know you. They want you. It's going to pay double the salary you're making now, basically, with better benefits. You'll have a private office. All of this stuff is right here for you. Can I set up the interview? Because I think it's yours. And I said, no. And she said, what? I said, I'm getting ready to go back to Unity Village, and I'm just feeling called in this different direction, this revision of my life, and it just feels absolutely right. And she said, Pam, do you realize what you're turning down? And I went, yes, but I know what I'm opening for as well. And she said, you know, if it was anybody else I could have called, I would have told you you were crazy. And she said, but you know what? Good luck. If you change your mind, I'm here. If you don't, just have a wonderful life. And so even though now I barely, in fact, I don't quite make what I made in the job that I got laid off from, paycheck-wise, my life has been filled with blessings and prosperity and meaning that I would have found some way, because it was always being of service, but I would have denied the calling of my heart if I had stayed in the corporate world. There is a book that I came across a number of years ago. We actually read it together in one of our book studies, The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. If you'd like a book that will change your relationship with money, this is one that I promise will do it. And I wanted to share with you all some of the thoughts and the stories from this book, because I know, like most Unity people, you already have a bookshelf of books you're getting ready to read. So I did a handout today for all of you, if you would like it, that has quotes, it has the toxic myths and the truths of sufficiency, and that is so funny. I just looked, and on the right-hand side, it renamed, numbered them. So some of you are going to have 1, 2, 3. Some of you are going to have 4, 5, 6. And I think that's really prosperous. How's that for a living example of how it works? So Lynn Twist was involved with the Hunger Project, and that was what she, her calling was, to be of service, to help end world hunger. And so she traveled all over the world. She spoke to different groups. And in 1998, she had been to the World Women's Conference in Beijing that I think a number of us remember, a lot of famous people went to, and women from all over the world. And she had gone there and met all of these women from different places. And she got a call and they said, would you please come speak to the women of Microsoft? They've heard about you and they want you to come speak. So she said, great. And so she gets the packet. She's got a first class ticket. She's flown to Seattle to the headquarters, and she'd asked for a small meeting. She said, I don't want to be in a boardroom. I don't want to be in a huge meeting room. I want to meet with these women. And there were about 10 of the women that gathered that were top execs, all of them worth millions. And she started talking to them about wealth and prosperity. And the thing that became very clear very quickly is these women were incredibly unhappy. They were blessed with money, but not with what those resources could bring in terms of a blessed life shared with others. They were doing work where they were working all day till 10 o'clock midnight, back there by 7 the next morning. They were working on Saturdays. They were had Sunday off, but they were on their computers half the day. And they felt the pressure of the competitiveness and having to succeed and meet all of these goals. And it had taken what you would think would have been this incredible blessing and turned it into something that was killing their souls in some ways. And so what she did is she said, let's take what you're doing and let's shift it a little bit. You're incredibly blessed with certain things, but you've lost other things that are of value to you. How can you perhaps begin to balance these a little bit? And she said, let's start with something you're grateful for. What are you grateful for? And so to be appreciative, and the things that the women said had nothing to do with how much money they were making. They were grateful they had two healthy children. They were grateful that they had family and friends. They appreciated the financial prosperity that they were experiencing, but as a result of her being there, they formed a support group and begin to shift from competitiveness into the more feminine model of collaboration and working together. We here at Unity, when I came, I brought the book by Christina Baldwin, who lives over on Whidbey, that's Calling the Circle. I said, I don't want to come as your CEO looking down. I want to gather all of us in circle together. I want to stand in leadership as I'm called, but in an open way that allows us to co-create whatever it is that we're going to do together. That's the kind of model she encouraged them to do and to recenter in their redefined perspective of what is prosperity and wealth about and why. The famous Bible passage that David mentioned, you know, money is the root of all evil. That's not the passage, actually. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. It's when that becomes the most important thing, you're just focused on one little piece of this amazing, prosperous life. Not long after she met with the Microsoft women, she was invited to go to Africa, to Senegal, out into the Sahel Desert with the Hunger Project. And she gets in a Jeep and they take off across this desert, and there are a little bit of a road and then there's no road. And so the guy's using a compass to get them to where they're going. And at one point, he turns off the engine and he said, okay, I need to reorient. Don't we all need to do that now and then? So he stopped for a minute and he listened, and they could hear the sounds of drums in the distance. And so they drove toward the sound of the drums, and they found 120 people sitting beneath two baobab trees, which are the ones that will provide shade in the desert and take very little water to survive. And this village had come to sit beneath the trees to welcome her as she came. She said the children came running out, the women came singing and dancing, the men welcomed her, and the first thing that happened, she said, was it was a Muslim culture. And so the men, much to her surprise, welcomed her to sit with them, but they were the inner circle, and the women were in an outer circle. And they were there to talk about, how do we get water to your village? Because the droughts were worse and worse and worse every single year. And so she talked with the men, and she had this intuitive sense that the women maybe had some thoughts that might be helpful. And so she said, I want to meet with the women. But you're meeting with us. You want to meet with the women? And she said, yes, and she did. And the women gathered around her, and they said, we feel an underground stream beneath our village. We've dreamt of it. We can feel it. We've told the guys, but they think that's completely illogical. It's not there. And they said, we want to dig and find that underground stream that we know is there. And so she went back and talked to the men and got them to agree. And so the women were allowed to dig, and some of the men joined them, and they began to dig at the side of their village for water. And guess what happened? Water. It was there, and it was so flowing that it provided everything they needed. They have a huge water tank that's always full. They were able to then help other villages nearby also find the water that was beneath their ground or pump it to them. That flow was right beneath their feet the whole time. But the thing that struck her the most was not just the blessings that were under their feet, but all around them there were not many blessings visible. They were hungry, they were thirsty, they were poor, but they had a culture where they sang and they were in gratitude and they did it together. She said, as the women began to dig, they sang and chanted and helped care for each other's children, and they did it with great joy. And I'm sure that's why it called everyone to be a part of it. That's what prosperity is like. We just think of it as bank accounts, but it's that divine flow of presence that is always with us. And she was so struck that the women who had much were so unhappy and the women who had so little found joy, and how it's about recognizing the presence of the divine that is always flowing with and for us. She says, no matter how much or how little money you have flowing in your life, when you direct that flow to soulful purpose, I love that, soulful purpose, you feel wealthy. You feel vibrant and alive when you use your money in a way that represents you. When you let money move to things that you care about, your life lights up. That's what money is really for. When you let your money move to things that you care about, your life lights up. We here are a tithing church because as we receive your gifts, we tithe 10%. And that is saying we've received the blessings, our cup is overflowing, and now we pour it back. David's told stories about how the board was short a certain amount of money and they didn't have it and they were going, what's going to happen? How do we pay our bills? And another church tithed to Unity Port Townsend and the check was for the exact amount they needed to pay the bill. Yes, and it works like that. It really and truly does. And so we don't stress tithing enough, I don't think, because it's such a charged word for so many people. People hear that, and I just see them kind of go, whoosh. When it should be, wow. It's not you have to tithe, it's you get to tithe. It's saying the money and the blessings that I receive, how can I share them with what matters most to me? It comes from the Old Testament. It's an ancient tradition. And I love the fact that 10% of a dollar isn't very much, is it? It's a dime. 10% of $10 is a dollar. Now, when you get up to $10,000 and that 10% is $1,000, doesn't it seem like a lot more? It's the same percentage. We're just looking at the check and not at the flow of the blessings that brought us to that moment. There's a wonderful saying, life turns on a dime. A dime is 10% of a dollar. A tiny amount can make a shift. And so you may never have tithed before, but if you'd like to get into this flow, I encourage you to consider doing it as a spiritual practice that will connect you with that divine flow. Try it for 3 months and just see what happens. I promise you'll have some amazing surprises. The blessings come not necessarily in the way you expect, but in a right and perfect way that brings with it joy and a way of going, wow, that really works. There are some toxic myths of scarcity and three truths of sufficiency that she goes through in the book. And I think these are really, really important. So I made a copy for you so you could take them home and think about them and play with them. The toxic myths of scarcity are what we in the U.S. tend to live from. There's never enough. I want more. It's us versus them. Nothing is ever enough. You get one thing and then you want the next thing and you want the next thing and you want the next thing. But at the same time, you're going, I don't know if I deserve it or not. It's this karmic dance. She says there is a natural law of abundance which pervades the entire universe, but it will not flow through a doorway of belief and lack and limitation. You need an open doorway, an open portal for the blessings to come through. There was a wonderful movie that was Auntie Mame, and she was sitting at the table and she said, most people are sitting at a banquet table starving to death in their lives. They're just looking for blessings in this narrow channel when there are all these things. Number one, the toxic myth is that there is not enough. It creates lack and greed and musical chairs. I want what they have. Oh, well, I'm still not happy. Well, maybe I want what they have. Well, I'm still not happy. Number two, the toxic myth is more is better. A lot of us at this point in our lives have started downsizing and found great joy in downsizing. And so that seeking more is a race with no end, they say. The third toxic myth is that's just the way it is. How many times have we said that one? Resignation, that's just the way it is, closes the door to growth. It closes that portal to welcoming new blessings in. Because with that's just the way it is, it almost always has a negative connotation. You're not celebrating at a party going, that's just the way it is. It's when you're awake at 3 o'clock in the morning going, how am I going to pay my bills? Well, that's just the way it is. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else will be added. All shall be well is our wonderful chant. So think about those three, and which of those is the one that has limited you the most? And what would it feel like to let go of that one? So there is not enough, more is better, or that's just the way it is. Recognize those limits and let them go. The three truths of sufficiency are realizing that we are meant to have life and have it abundantly. Jesus said that. I want you to have life and have it abundantly. Let it be blessed. When you let go of trying to get more of what you really don't need, it frees up oceans of energy to make a difference with what you have. When you make a difference with what you have, it expands. It opens your life. So the three truths of sufficiency is money is like water. It's that flow that's always present. Number two, what you appreciate appreciates. It grows. What you are in gratitude for cannot do anything but grow. And number three, collaboration creates prosperity. Doing it together. Doing it with others with a shared vision. It's an alchemy of sharing our gifts. So money is like water. What you appreciate appreciates. And collaboration creates prosperity. Pick one of those to be your motion in the direction of prosperous living. I'd like to share one more story from this book. And it's basically Gertrude's story. She said Gertrude changed her life forever. It was 1978, and she was scheduled to go to Harlem to meet with a community group who was interested in the Hunger Project and supporting it. And so she was meeting in a church basement in Harlem in the evening. Well, she gets a call the day before, and the CEO of a huge conglomeration that was a food company said, oh, I need to meet with you. I want to do a donation. And so she was like, wow, I've got this great opportunity, but I also need to be sure I get to New York, to Harlem. And so she did both in the same day. She flew to Chicago, met with the CEO, and then went to Harlem. In the meeting with the CEO, she tried to explain to him the importance of the Hunger Project, how it could change lives, how it could change the world. And she said, when she walked in, he said, you've got 15 minutes. And so she tried to kind of consolidate and present. And then when he was kind of looking out the window and not paying much attention, But when she finished, he pulled out a pre-written check for $50,000 and gave it to her. And he said, "My company's been in trouble. We've done a couple of things that were not good. This will be good for our PR. We'll be able to tell everybody we're doing something good with the Hunger Project to relieve our guilt for all these other corporate misdeeds that have made us tons of money." And so she took the check and she put it in her briefcase, but she didn't feel good about it. She said, "I felt like I was facilitating something that wasn't good." And so she just struggled. And so she got on the plane with her briefcase and flew to New York and went to the Harlem church basement. And she did her presentation and asked for donations. And there was absolute silence in the group. And then a woman stood up in the back. This is what she said. "Girl, my name is Gertrude, and I like what you've said. I ain't got no checkbook, no credit cards. To me, money is a lot like water. For some folks, it rushes through their life like a raging river. Money comes through my life like a little trickle. But I want to pass it on in a way that does the most good for the most folks. I see that as my right and my responsibility, and it is also my joy." And so she gave the $50 she had earned that day cleaning someone's home. Others heard her and saw that and began to come up. And it was dollar bills and $5 bills and $10 bills. And people were bringing and giving, and she didn't have a place to hold it. So she opened up her briefcase, and they put all of this money into the briefcase. Small bills, but given with great love and with great intention to bless. And so she was so touched, and she went back to her hotel room. And what she ended up doing the next day was writing a letter to the CEO of the food company and saying, "I cannot in good conscience accept this. I don't think you're with us in our intention to serve people. And I'd rather have smaller donations for people who are doing this from their soul than to have a huge donation that doesn't come with it the love and the caring and the energy that's what will truly empower it to make a difference in the world." And so she sent the check back. And it was about 10 years later, she receives a letter in the mail. And it was from the CEO to whom she had returned the check. And he said, "Never in my entire career did anybody return a check. And never for the reason that you gave." And he said, "That touched me in a way that nothing else ever had." He said, "It changed the way I thought." And he said, "I know that money would have really helped you at that time, but I appreciated your integrity and recognizing the importance of not just what you're doing, but why you're doing it." And in the note of appreciation, he said he'd retired, and that he retired, I'm sure, with a huge golden parachute. And he said, "This time I want to donate. It's not from the company to appease our guilt. This is from me, because you touched my life. I still remember, and I want to unite with you in making a difference in the world." And the check that he gave was far, far more than the $50,000. But most of all, he consciously gave with the flow of his own soul and connection. This is what Lynn Twist says. Gertrude taught me that money is like water. It's a carrier. It can carry blessed energy, possibility, and intention, or it can carry control, domination, and guilt. So let the money move in your life in things that you care about so your life will light up. Eric Butterworth says it this way: God is the source of a mighty stream of substance, and you are a tributary of that stream, a channel of expression. Blessing the substance increases the flow. The more conscious you become of the presence of living substance, the more it will manifest itself for you, and the richer will be the common good of all. Identify yourself with substance, and you will soon begin to rejoice in the ever-present bounty of God. It's the flow, allowing in, and then being the vessel that pours forth. David talked earlier, and one of the things that I found myself remembering is that wonderful country western song. I think it's Reba McEntire, and it's, you can stand in the river and be dying of thirst. It's like the banquet. Same thing. It is important to be part of that flow. The Dead Sea is dead because water flows into it, but it has no outlet. Water cannot go anywhere. It's stagnant. When you are in that flow of prosperity and blessings coming into you, through you, and then back out into the world, that is when you truly come alive and your life lights up. The mantra I have used for years since my very first Unity Church comes from Eric Butterworth. And I put it on the bottom of your handout. I encourage you to use this every single day. God is my instant, constant, and abundant source of supply. Instant, constant, and abundant. Three key words. So keep this near and dear. Let's say them together. God is my instant, constant, and abundant source of supply. Two more times. God is my instant, constant, and abundant source of supply. God is my instant, constant, and abundant source of supply. And so it is. Go forth blessed and blessing.